All right, let's go.
Hello, welcome to Don Cherry's Grapevine Podcast. And Dad, you were caught, was made aware that you made a mistake last week.
Yes, and I did it. And you know, it's a funny thing. When I'm with Nancy Lee, I used to call her Nancy Green. How many people do you know named Nancy? And I used to call her Nancy Green.
Yes, because Nancy Green was a skier.
Oh, she was beautiful. She was the best skier of all. And so I, you know, Nancy Green, you just said Nancy Green.
So all Nancys are green to you.
I don't know. Do you know any other Nancys? I don't know any Nancys.
No, I don't. They're like the word.
You know any, Tim?
No.
I don't know.
So just some people, if they missed last week's podcast,
we were talking about
you were getting fired, and the executive producer's name was Nancy Lee, and we kept saying, and I even said it too, Nancy Green.
Yeah.
But it was Nancy Lee who said you were fired, and then you said, we'll see, and then she was fired or moved on. I don't think she was fired. She moved on.
No, she moved on.
And then...
I don't know what she's doing now. She probably...
She retired.
Oh, she retired?
Yeah.
Ooh, nice pension there.
Mm. Oh, I don't know what she is. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, and you, what we never mentioned last week is Dolores. Dolores, I call her Dolores. What was her full name?
Dolores Calliman, I believe is his.
We at Hockey Night in Canada, we just call her Dolores.
And she was the one that...
She made... and you know, when the first time I heard Hockey Night in Canada, how does that go? Dun, da, 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 da.
Yeah, so she was the one that they got to do the Hockey Night in Canada.
Yeah, I heard her husband. It was a jingle. I think she only got $800 for a jingle at the start. And then they played it again and she got 10 grand, I think, or something like that. Anyhow, and I when I heard that music, that's when the clowns come in and the circus. And then I heard Hockey Night in Canada. How's it go, Tim? And I always thought... Yeah, I always thought, you know, it's kind of, it does sound like a...
She never saw a hockey game. And the thing is, she said, I thought of gladiators going onto the ice. And the clown theme, dun-dun, is called Enter the Gladiators.
Oh, okay. So we won't go any further than that. But anyhow, I remember back in, I think it was around 2004, Scott Moore was the head boss. He was the big gun. And
I think some people might be interested. When they first, it was her and her husband, Richard Morris, and they were in Toronto, and they did jingles. That's what they did for their lives. They did like 3,000 jingles over their career. And McLaren Advertising, who owned Hockey Night in Canada at the time, right? Yeah. And they basically bought the airtime off of CBC. They wanted her to do a jingle for, it wasn't for the opening, it was for something. So she did the jingle, and I think she got like $800, but there was no residuals. And then they decided, it was pretty catchy, and they decided to use it for the opening. And then because she got the opening, she started making money. It was classified different. And she got like up to $10,000 a year.
$10,000, yeah.
Yeah. So that's where it went. She didn't get any money. Then they changed it. And then things got into the lawyers.
2004. I remember I never, ever dreamed that we'd ever... TSN now got it. But anyhow, I never dreamed that we'd ever lose that theme song. And Scott Moore was the head guy. And he was noted, and it wasn't his fault, but it was, you know.
What happened was that I guess they were, the contract was pretty, like where they could use it.
Yeah.
And then in 2004, I guess was the lockout, and yeah, they had games overseas. Remember they had like all-star guys going over and playing overseas, and they used the Hockey Night in Canada theme, and then she sued for breach of contract. So that was in 2004, and so they went into litigation, and then in 2008, that's when the contract was up. And Scott Moore, this is what I heard anyway, so this is, I don't know 100% true, but this is what I heard, that Scott Moore said that, they said, well, we want to negotiate, and he says, well, we're in the middle of a lawsuit with you. We can't negotiate the contract when we're in court. And they waited around, and then TSN came in and snapped it up.
And when I hear, everybody recognizes, thinks it's Hockey Night in Canada. Anyhow,
they said she was offered $1 million.
I think she got close to $1 million. Yeah. Not bad for a little jingle.
Yeah, and then then what happened after that was Hockey Night and CBC, and they said they owned all the music rights, or like the publishing rights, so they had to re-record the song because they couldn't use the original, any of the original stuff.
Oh, there was a drummer. Remember that drummer?
Yeah, Neil Peart did one. He of Rush. He did one, and they did all that stuff. So that was, but boy, you that was Saturday night. I mean, you got chills when you heard that, and
it's kind of lost all meaning now. Yeah.
Well, it represented Saturday night. Now they play it any time of the week, every time.
I remember Scott Moore. We were driving along. We were going to Kenora, I think. And I said, whatever happened there? And he says, yeah. He says, you know, I was going to fire you. And he says, many times. And he said, I'd been noted. My thing in life would be with the CBC, I got rid of you and got rid of the song. And it wasn't his fault at all, but he'd have been noted for getting rid of the song. But anyhow, Dolores made a lot of money. And what was she, 94 when she died?
She passed away in 94. She lived in England most of her life, but I guess she was over in Spain at the time when she passed away. But
she made a lot of money.
So, Dad, last week or the week before, we kind of touched a little bit about the big trade that Harry Sinden pulled off when you were coaching. And that probably, I would think, the biggest trade ever in the history of the NHL. And we got an email from David out west in Alberta. He wanted to know more about that trade and how it all happened.
You know, it was a big trade. Now, think about this now, if it happened now. 76 goals Phil Esposito got. He got 76 goals 1 year. The next year, he got 68 goals. And he led the league in goals for 6 years in a row. And
so it'd be almost... It would be along the lines of because he was still in his prime then. Yeah. So it'd be like the Oilers trade McDavid. It'd be along that lines.
Yeah, well, and I don't think McDavid's ever got 76 goals. I remember talking to Phil. He says, I got 76 goals. The next year I got 68 goals. He says, still, Phil, you're having a bad year. You only had 68 goals. Anyhow, I did tell a story about Bobby and Phil meeting Bobby in the hall, and I'll quickly go through. I met Bobby in the hall. I got a call from Harry Sinden at 5:30 in the morning. You have to get to Phil first. They're going to get to him in his room. You have to go 5:30 in the morning. I phone Bobby, and meet Bobby in the hall. We go down to Phil's room, and Phil says. And he started to cry when I told him he thought I was fired. I know I told the story before, but I'm going to tell it anyhow. And Bobby goes over by the window and he says, if you tell me that I have been sailed to New York, I've been traded to New York Rangers, I'm going to jump out that window. I said, Bobby, get away from that window. No, you know, we went on a tear after that. I mean, I remember Harry coming in the room. No, he phoned me and he said, we lost. I think we lost in Vancouver.
Vancouver, yeah.
Yeah. And then I said, Harry, I saw something. I said, don't worry. He said, don't worry. He said, you'll be gone and I'll be gone too. I remember they had a cartoon in the paper. John Rattel had a bad back. He was a golf pro and he had to give up that. We had to put a board in every room he went into on
the road.
Yeah,
he had to sleep on a board because his back was so bad.
His back, and he walked straight, eh? He walked straight. And his was bad, and it had Emil Francis trading a guy with a bad back, and Brad Park was the other, and Joel Zanussi. Brad Park had a bad knee, and it showed Emil Francis with he was a bandit, stealing. And so I remember going, Phil, and then now I got to go in. We wanted to trade a Dallas Smith, but they wanted Vadney. Vadney was he had a pretty good year for them too.
Yeah, he played well for them all his whole career. Had over 100 minutes every year.
Yeah,
he was funny though. You told him about the story with Vad though that he used to fight a lot and you were
he fought Schultz, Dave the Hammer Schultz. Was pretty tough to fight him, And after I'm having a meeting and in front of the guys, they said, you know, I really admire Carol Vadney. He's not a good fighter, yet he takes the toughest guys. So he comes up to me after, geez, Grapes, he says, I thought I was a pretty good fighter. I remember that. So anyhow, we lose the first game. You know, I remember, you want to, I'll tell you about the first practice, morning practice we had. So, no, it was just a practice. And Phil come down to get his skates. And everybody's, you know, Phil's been there and had a no-trade contract. I can't understand
it. Yeah, Phil didn't have a no-trade contract.
Imagine that. And he could, and I guess he figured scoring all those goals, he'd never going to get traded. And you know, he got a good offer from World Hockey. Imagine what he would have got from World Hockey. So he come down, and so I go on the ice, and I blow the whistle. And I remember Bobby coming up to me saying, "Did you know about that trade?" I said, "Yes, I did." He says, "Were you involved?" I says, "Yep." And I remember Bobby saying, "Well, why didn't you wait till I come back?" I remember him saying that. So I blow the whistle, nothing. It was nothing. Like, it didn't speed up. So I thought, well, better
not. So they were rebelling like children.
Mutiny. And I said, okay, break at the blue line. They never broke at the blue line. And so I call them over in the corner. I says, listen, there's a lot of adjective folks that I can't put on this because I know a lot of kids listening. I said, if you don't skate, and when I blow this whistle the next time, if we can get rid of Carol Vadney, one of my best friends on the road, I hear, and Andy Savard used to say, when you see Vad, you see Don. When you see Don, you see Vad. And I said, we can get rid of Phil Esposito. We can get rid of anybody. So we had no problem after that. And we lost, like I said, we lost in Vancouver that night. But anyway, we played California, I think, the next night. And what was our record?
I took a look at it. Like, it was funny because the Bruins and the Rangers basically had the same record when the trade happened. 5 wins, 5 losses, 1 tie, and the Bruins had 2 ties. But then after that, after the trade, the Bruins went 43-10-15 for the rest of the year. Imagine that.
Yeah. So you know we're going to win half of those games. So we would have won 50 games. 50 games.
Yeah, and then unfortunately, the Rangers ended up in last place and missed the playoffs.
Rattel led the league, led the team, Boston Bruins, with 90 points. Brad Park, I think he had 53 points in 43 games. I think Bobby had 15 points.
He had 18 points in 10 games.
18 points, yeah, something like that. Let me tell you something. If we had Park, they were the first two that I ever saw went wide. Usually when you had two good guys in the point, they played together. They went wide next to the boards, and boy, I thought I had the Stanley Cup. Can you imagine?
Didn't you go into the bar in Vancouver?
I went in the bar in Vancouver by myself. That's where I saw Dallas Smith. I went in the bar by myself after the trade, and I said, I have to phone Ma. I don't know why. I said, Ma, we just won the Stanley Cup. She's, you know, but she didn't understand. I said, we made a Harrison made a trade, and I said, we are going to win the Stanley Cup. And Sandy, what do you got to say?
Well, no, I just have to, you know, you said something about how good of friends you and Carol Vadney were. And, you know, and you know, you read in the papers in the past how you're so anti-French and everything. Oh, and yeah. You know, it's so it just amuses me and I just shake my head.
Yeah, and
why don't you tell the story about you and Carol were so close that about what he did for you for your ring?
I
don't think you've told that story. You always wear your Calder Cup ring there all the time. Have it on today, Sunday morning.
Yeah, it's got a big diamond in it. We were at team. We just traded him, eh?
Just traded him. You're in New York.
And we were at Team Canada, and he was there. And again, I was with him, and he said, "Look, I'm driving out to my jeweler. Would you like to come along with me?" And I said, "Well, you know," I said, "Okay, I got nothing to do." So I went along, and it was a French guy, and he said something in French. He said, and I said, I had two little the glass and my rings were they'd turned green from
they were diamond, they were glass.
They were glass. And Vad said something took my ring. He says, I said, I should get two little chips put in the side here. And Vad took my ring and said...
Well, you thought, didn't you think that he was just, he was told the guy to clean the ring?
Yeah, I don't know what he did. He gave him the ring and he said something to him in French.
Yeah.
So I go back after it's all over and, you know, I go about by myself and I see this great big diamond in the middle and two little diamonds on the side. And I had no money. I mean, I'm making 40 grand for the Boston Bruins. I have no money. And we didn't have credit cards back then or anything. And here I am with this great big diamond. So I was flabbergasted. I looked at the ring and I said, I can't pay for this. I didn't ask for it. He said, don't worry about it. He said, Carol's taking care of the whole thing. He took care. He had the ring. And what happened was he never wore big rings or anything like that. He had a ring made for Raymond, his wife, and that big diamond was left over. And he said, put that diamond in
That was a Stanley Cup ring diamond.
Yeah, it was Stanley Cup ring.
Yeah, because he had a Stanley Cup ring diamonds put in for his wife.
Yeah, and it was diamonds left over. And he had to put in my ring. I never forgot that. Carol Vadnay, what a great guy. Tim, you should jump in here now and talk about Spread. I think they're great guys.
Yeah, we'd just like to thank our sponsor, Spreads.ca. It's a Canadian-owned online casino and sportsbook. Use the grid promo Grapes when you sign up, and you get a 10 spins on the big wheel for some big dough. They will match your deposit up to $500, and you will also get a $25 spot on the bet because football's coming up now, and football's big on betting. But I did look, Dad, like we talked last week, I'm betting Chicago's going to win the Stanley Cup. They're 51-1 odds to win the Stanley Cup.
I think they've got a good shot. I really do really think they've got a good shot. Well, Fleury come back. There's good lots of reasons why Fleury should come back.
Well, he is. He says he's going to sign. He's going to sign with them. I don't know if they're going to sign him another year. But they said, because you look and you said that, like the Colorado's favored at 6.5-1. Tampa is,
again.
Tampa's second at 7.5. Then Vegas, it's 9.5-1. And then the Leafs are 11-1 favorites. So I'd put Chicago up against anyone.
No,
of
those. With the defense they've got, they've. I like Chicago with Fleury, and Fleury, like I said last week, he'll have a chip on his shoulder. He'll be ready to go.
Yeah, and just one other thing before we get into a question that, from another listener, you and I were talking the other day that Gerard Gallant he goes into New York, and so the New York Rangers. And you know Gerard Gallant, he was kind of a.
He's a player's coach. He'll do great.
What was one of the first players he asked for and he got?
And Vegas is going to make very sorry they did this for a third-round pick. They Ryan Reeves, and I want to see the first game in Washington. And you know what I think of Tom Wilson? I mean, yeah. I really like Tom Wilson. He's my type of guy. But I'm going to tell you, wherever I am, I want to see that game because Ryan Reeves and Tom Wilson go at it. So Tom, be ready.
Right. Well, you know Gerard Gallant was saying, there is no way I'm coaching a team with Tom Wilson throwing our guys around and then the general manager and the president whine about it in the paper and nobody
jumps
in.
And the owner.
And the owner. And nobody jumps in and it. That's not, because Gallant, he coached Reeves in Vegas.
And he was a tough player. Yeah. You know, not as tough as Reeves.
Well, he didn't back down. But you could tell he's not going to stand for that. So.
And Ryan Reeves and Tom Wilson, no matter where I am, I want to see that first game. That is going to be a dandy. And Tom will hold his own because he'll be ready. But you better be ready because Ryan Reeves will be ready.
Right. So, David, next we want to go, we were talking a little bit about that trade. We got a question from Steve, and he wants to know about John Rattel. He said, we talked a couple of funny stories about him, but he heard that he was nothing but class, and is that true?
You know, and for you people that remember Jean Béliveau, he reminded me of Jean Béliveau. I think the very first year, like I said earlier, he led the team in scoring. And I remember, I used to sit up, the coach always sat up, Cindy, in first class. And I used to sit by myself all the time. And he used to, do you want some wine? Do you want some liqueur? And meals and stuff like that. And I never,
You're a meat and potatoes guy. You just
I'd say no, and I'd just keep reading. And don't you want any dinner? No. And I thought, now who on this club, and first guy I come to, what was Jean Ratel. He'd like the liqueur. He never drank much. And the liqueur, and he'd have a nice meal. So I remember saying to him, Jean, I want you to sit in first class. No, Donny. No, I'm sitting with the players. So I said, look, Jean, I want you to go, and I want you to sit up first class. I got to talk to Schmatzy. I know you got a seat. I didn't have to talk to anybody. So he went up, and they asked if they want the liqueur. You know, the little liqueur. Yes. Oh, you know, first class was really nice. And he had the meal and the whole deal. Yeah.
Was it Carol Vadney or was it Jean Ratel that taught you about the button, how to
put
the
napkin? Oh, no, that was Carol Vadney. In fact, the napkin
attached to your button.
I remember I was like a big hick.
Oh, right off the farm, eh?
No, I wasn't. I didn't know. I don't think anybody else.
I wouldn't know that.
No.
All right, well, explain it. In first class on Air Canada.
No, I was sitting beside Vad, and they were playing privilege, like I said earlier. And I took the serviette there, and I didn't want it to get on my tie,
right.
You know, for lunch. And he said, Donny, no, you don't do that. And he said, see this? And, you know, I know he was tight. He thought I was a heck. You see this little, if you look in Air Canada, in the corner, there is
a buttonhole.
A buttonhole that you can put on, you know. So I felt like a real heck. And I remember another time he asked me if I'd go out with him and Phil to have dinner. This was when I first went there. And I said, well, you know, Phil Esposito, you know, and if he asked me, I'll go out. And I never forget that. He was the guy, and Phil was going, yeah, give them a couple of drinks over there. So the guy come over with the wine. You know, the guy with the big plate or the big piece.
Yeah, I forget what they call those.
Maitre d', I guess. All right, whatever it is. And so the guy, he said to Vad, is this wine okay? And he swishes around in his mouth. And he put it in the plate, you know, and all that. And I was sitting there, and he grabbed the bottle. He said, yeah, that's okay. And started to drink out of the bottle. Oh, yeah, I never forgot that. I was stunned, and you should have seen the look on the guy's face. It was a joke, to get me.
Yeah, to make you feel at home.
And I tell you, I never went with them again.
Who paid?
I had to pay the third, you know, like the
that's
three
the hockey. That's the hockey player rule,
that was
right?
A joke, yeah.
You got to pay a third, no matter. So you maybe had a beer, and they had a couple bottles of wine.
And they were saying, give them some.
So they're buying people other rounds, but you have to still one third of the bill.
And when he grabbed that bottle and started... Would that start?
Now, during dinner, you didn't ask for ketchup, did you?
No, I don't know. Sometime I'll tell a story about Al McNeil on that one.
Yeah, but just to get back to Jean Ratel.
Jean Ratel, so then I told him I wanted to go first class. But Guelph, Ontario, Guelph Biltmores, they had a junior A club, and this is the New York Rangers. They practiced every day. They were on the ice every day. Oh, days off, they played it tough. And when you went to New York Rangers, it was the same thing. You were always on the ice every day. So I this guy was as thin as a rail, and he had bad back. So I said, Jean, we played Thursday. What would we play, Thursday, Saturdays, and Sunday?
Yeah, it was Thursdays, Saturdays, and Sundays. So
yeah,
we always usually had...
Yeah, we...
Yeah, the first game of the week was always on a Thursday.
Yeah, so I said, I don't want to see you here till Tuesday. I don't want you to come Monday, because Monday...
Well, was it Wednesday, actually, because Tuesday was you skating.
Well, I got to Wednesday. I said, I don't want you... No, Donnie, no. All my career, I have... just one more thing. All my career, I've always been on the ice every day. So I forced... I said, if you come tomorrow... And I said in front of the guys, I said, if you come tomorrow, I'm suspending you. I would never suspend him, but, you know. So he didn't come. And he said, well, what if the reporters... And I said, I'll just say you have the flu. And the reporters, and Harry knew what I was doing. Harry Sinden, the general manager, knew what I was doing.
But just to jump in for a second, Dad, there's no way Tom Fitzgerald or Clark Booth or any of those guys in Boston... would have said Jean Ratel wasn't in camp
no,
or practice like today. know, as soon as genre tell was, if it was today, you'd have them tweeting and it would go on to radio and to be on TSN and be on Sportsnet. Genre tell's not. And, but back then the reporters just kind of knew what you were doing and they just,
well, they were great reporters in Boston. They used to protect me. Someday I'll tell you the thing. So John, it was funny. I said, I don't want you here Tuesday. I don't want you. And it got to the point that he'd come for the morning skate, and boy, he led the league. And I remember I got a paper, an old paper. I was reading the paper. He said I could play for Don Cherry for another 10 years because I could baby him along. And someday we'll talk about Park. But that John Rattel, he was a class guy. You just had to treat him right.
He taught me. He gave me golf lessons.
You did?
Yeah, he was a really good golfer.
Well, he was a pro golfer, and he had to give up because of his back.
Yeah. Plus, I think also it was a thing, too, in the NHL. You don't touch him, or else you answered to
oh,
John.
Yeah, we had a thing. Someday I'll tell that story, too. But we don't have time now.
Yeah, just one funny thing, though. Like you in 59-60, he played three games in Trois-Rivières with the Three Rivers Lions. Same year you were there, you guys just must have missed pass because you didn't start there at the year.
No.
So it looked like he might have been there at the beginning
of
the
year. I think he was in Kitchener, too.
Yeah, he played for the Kitchener Beavers, too, in 61-62.
Yeah, I played for the Kitchener Beavers, and I played for... We got to end. We're getting too long, but I'll just tell you a story. Dave Ballin played for Kitchener, too. His name was Dave Ballin. He was a pretty good hockey player. He played for the Montreal Canadiens. He was a pretty good hockey player. And I don't know if he didn't like me. I shouldn't say he didn't like me. He just didn't care for me. And he was giving my brother a hard time, Richard. And Richard was playing for Kingston. He was going to school at the time. And he kept. And I thought, oh, boy, this is... My brother was a black belt in judo, third dan. No, first dan. And there's only three. So I kept saying, geez, I hope he doesn't give Richard heck. Richard dropped his stick and grabbed him in the front and lifted him right out of the bench. I never forgot that. And everybody jumped in. He just threw him back on the bench. And I never forgot that. A lot
so
of things.
We asked you, Dad, if Uncle Rich started giving it to him, which he could have because Uncle Rich was pretty tough, would you have jumped in?
I don't know about that one. I don't know. It was somebody I liked. I tried to top him. Probably Richard. If I ever jumped in, Richard at the time, he was black belt in judo.
You know what? You'd be worried about what your mother would say.
Yeah, you're more worried about mom.
What are you two doing?
Yeah, no, we never ever fought. We never wrestled. But I never forgot him grabbing Ballin, pulling him right off the bench.
Well, can I just tell one quick story about Uncle Rich's thing? We talked about it just quickly, and we'll wrap it up. Uncle Rich was playing in, I don't know what league it was, but they were playing, it may have been Oklahoma. He was playing.
He was playing for Oklahoma. Blazers.
So it was one game left in the season, and they were on a road trip, and they were playing the team that they were going to meet first round of the playoffs.
Oh, yeah.
And that team was coached by Freddie Shiro. And Freddie Shiro started the Broad Street Bullies kind of mentality back then, that this team was beating everybody up. And Uncle Rich, they had a pretty tough team. It was Uncle Rich. I think Wayne Cashman was on
Cheevers,
the team. And it was
kind of Gapco.
Yeah, so there was a tough team. So they're driving, and the game didn't mean anything because, you know, the playoffs were all set. And Uncle Rich stopped the bus. He's just outside the rink, and he says, this game doesn't mean anything. He says, because this team's far ahead of us in the standings. He goes, so we don't care if we lose. Why don't we just go out and beat the living hell out of them? So I guess what happened was just like Slapshot, right off the face-off, they grabbed them and they started beating up this team that Freddie Shiro coached. And I says, what happened? He says, we beat them four straight in the playoffs.
One more story, and then we got to end. When I talked to the guys with Colorado when I was out there in Boston, and they said, Richard played for the Philadelphia, and he was number five. And they said, whatever you do, don't get that number five excited and mad at you, or you'll be a dead man. And I always remember Richard, nobody ever fooled with him.